Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Thursday, November the 4th, 2021. 12 coming up on 13 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great guest this hour. You know his voice very, very well. One of the best broadcasters in Central Ohio. The voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes on radio, Paul Keels. Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Scott. How you doing?
Good to speak with you. Good to hear that voice. When did that voice develop?
You know, that's nice of you to say, Scott. I couldn't tell you because, and maybe you've heard other people say this, but your own voice doesn't sound the same to yourself. I don't know if it's a biological thing or whatever. So I couldn't really tell you, but it's just nice that people are very complimentary all the time.
Your voice can be heard during the games and doing other things. Do you like to hear the sound of your voice?
No, it sounds high, screechy, and whiny to me. But yeah, others may feel the same way too. There's something that's uncomfortable or unrecognizable or whatever about listening to your own voice. Now, having said that, I do appreciate hearing other folks that have great voices, and you know, you feel like maybe you have a little envy there. But nah, to myself, it just doesn't sound the same. I know that sounds crazy, but it just doesn't sound the same to me.
I don't think anybody likes their voice. I've never ran into anybody who said, boy, I like to listen to myself.
I've heard some people that have said that.
Oh, really? So there are a few.
There are some, yeah, but I think it's a minority.
Absolutely. Paul, want to get a little background here. Where did you grow up? What was your childhood like?
Well, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And, you know, my father was from Cincinnati. My mother was from the Columbus area. But grew up there and went to high school and college in Cincinnati, went to Xavier University, and began my career there. But, you know, I was the oldest of six kids, and it was at a time where, you know, back in the 60s and into the 70s, you didn't have a lot of sporting events on TV, maybe only on the weekends. And so my brothers and I, we became fans of listening to the Reds on the radio. At the time, there was an NBA team in Cincinnati that's now in Sacramento. I was a big fan of the Cincinnati Royals. The Bengals eventually came along into you know, my youth, and also we were fortunate to have University of Cincinnati, Xavier, Miami right in the area, and listening to Ohio State too. With my mother having been a graduate and grown up in Columbus, there always was an influence of Ohio State in our lives.
Other than broadcasting, was there ever something you wanted to be?
Was very much involved in high school and even a little bit in elementary school into art and. Got involved in some things that way. Had also been involved in musical theater productions. At one point, considered possibly getting into teaching. Did some student teaching when I was in college, but those were kind of the only other things that really were on the edge there.
How did you end up in the broadcasting business?
Well, I was very fortunate that in going to school at Xavier, we had a student station that was mostly run and operated by students, and we had a faculty moderator who, when he took over, really kind of changed the position of the station to make it mostly student involvement. And got involved in doing high school football games, some college basketball games. At that time, Xavier didn't have a commercial station, was doing their basketball games. And even though that was kind of the goal all along, it was great to get the opportunity to do that, as well as hosting some sports shows, working as a newscaster, and even pulling a few different music shifts. So there was a lot of opportunity that was created by the student station at Xavier University, and that led to getting into commercial broadcasting.
When it comes to covering sports, what is the big difference? What attributes do you have that maybe a talk show host or an interviewer or a news person doesn't have to have to make that game interesting?
Well, there's similarities and differences. Certainly, when it comes to a live sporting event, it's just keeping in mind that what you're trying to do is portray something to someone who can't see it, who's not there. They're either in their car, or they're working, or whatever it is they're doing that has them following a sporting event on the radio. So, you know, there's a few things that go into it. You can never give score and time too much, because even if people are listening, it's not that intense focus all of the time. We all find that. So you can can never give the score on the time too much. It, also, just being on point with trying to be as descriptive as possible. Where's the ball at? Is it in the right side of the field, the left side of the field? Is it in the backcourt or in the forecourt when it comes to basketball? Is it at Ohio State's 40? Is it at Penn State's 40? Just trying to do all of the things that, that on TV aren't necessary, but on radio you're trying to describe as much as you can, as well as adding in descriptions about maybe the stadium or the facility you're at, what the wind's like, what the sun's like, what the colors of the uniforms or things like that. Just trying to be as descriptive to somebody who can't see what it is that you're seeing.
When it comes to radio, a few years ago I heard somebody say that, that baseball was really radio's game, that that because of the way the tempo, the speed of the game, that, that radio really was made for baseball. Football, a little more difficult. Have you ever found that to be?
Well, I think they're both difficult. I mean, I think all of the sports actually are difficult, Scott, but I think baseball, because there's so many games, that allows you to have what at times can be a constant companion. And, you know, I think baseball, just because of how long it's been portrayed through the media. Football, maybe because it's once a week and people kind of figure their social plans around their favorite team. And in most cases, folks are, you know, sitting on the couch watching, whether it's their pro team or their college team. Similarly with basketball, too. I think, you know, maybe pro basketball and pro hockey at times, but baseball just has always had this symbiotic relationship with radio. And I think the other part of it too is the pace of the game allows for not only the description of the game, but you know, those that are great storytellers. And it also, when you're fortunate to grow up with so many baseball announcers that have been involved with one team for so many years, you know, with the perfect example being Ben Scully of the Dodgers, that voice or those voices, when you compare their partners, they're kind of an accompaniment to people's favorite teams, and especially during the summer months when people are outside doing more.
When it comes to football, because when we watch it on television, a lot of times what they concentrate on are the hits, the shots that people take in the game. On radio, how can you portray that accurately?
Good question. You just try to do it as best you can. Sometimes you don't, I mean, even though we have a TV monitor in our booth, it's not something that you can focus on because you can easily get caught up in watching it and you're talking about something that your listeners don't see. In a lot of cases, you're trying to figure out if there's an injury, who's the injured player. You're also still continuing to point out what the down and distance is, where the ball is, what the score is, what the time is that's left in the game. It's a different animal for television because they can show the replays of the hit that many more times. You can't do that on radio. So you just try to do it in a way that, that does service to what a radio audience is listening to, but keeping all of the other basic points pointed out to those that are tuned in.
When there is a delay in the game for whatever reason, what do you tend to fall back on in the booth?
It can be a combination of things. The first thing you do if it's a lengthy delay, if you have it available, that's where you can get commercial breaks in. Sometimes maybe you're out of breaks for that particular quarter or that particular half. We're very fortunate with football that we have a sideline guy who can kind of add some other elements to what's going on, whether it's what's going on with the medical attention by the athletic trainers or the team doctors. There's also the opportunity to promote things like the upcoming game the following week. It does allow you maybe to give some of the background on the particular player that's involved, maybe recap what's gone on in the game as far as the scoring that's got you to that point. So there's a number of different things you can kind of fall back on. You know, if you get into a lengthy delay, and, you know, fortunately those don't happen that terribly often, you know, then that, we've had a few instances with lightning delays where we've ended up having to replay previous programming or, you know, trying to get maybe a live interview. A few years ago, there was a game that was delayed because of lightning, and we were fortunate to have R.G. Griffin come in the booth and spend some time talking about his outstanding football career. So you just kind of have to be ready to wing it.
When you are at the stadium and amongst all that ambiance that a football stadium or really any sports stadium carries, how cognizant are you of the fan listening on the radio as you are trying to call the game?
Quite a bit, because that's who you're focused on. That's who you're trying to deliver to. So you're trying to make sure that you can describe as quickly, along with the pace of the game, and as succinctly in as few words or as efficiently in as few words as possible to that person that's listening. And part of what I kind of reflect on at times, too, I'm a big fan when I'm driving of turning live sporting events on, whether it's a team that I care about or not, and listening and trying to, you know, follow as best I can what's going on with a particular game that I'm listening to. So that becomes a great reference point.
Is it better, easier to have somebody in the booth with you?
Meaning what? In which capacity?
Somebody there, maybe one person doing play-by-play, one person doing color.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, it is. And many years ago, I did do basketball by myself for a lengthy period of time, but it is easier to have somebody else there. It's a second set of eyes. It's a second input as far as what's going on. Generally in that role, it's a former athlete who's been in that position, so they're able to explain to the listener something from a reference point that you can't, not having been an athlete at that level. So it is easier, and it does, you know, at times it gives you an opportunity to catch your breath. It gives you an opportunity just to, you know, kind of look, and if you need to reestablish, making sure you have the right player out there, making sure you've got the score written down, or, you know, just to kind of refocus on everything else. But it is easier, no question.
Do you have to have a chemistry with that person so you're not talking over them or at the same time?
It helps. It really does. And I've been fortunate with the two guys with the Ohio State games that I work with, Jim Lachey and Ron Stokes. I've worked with them for 24 years. So you kind of know where one another's going oftentimes. You kind of have certain, you know, established barriers. For example, you know, Jim knows that as soon as the team gets to the line of scrimmage and they're ready to snap the ball, that's when he needs to, you know, discontinue his thoughts. Same with Ron Stokes once the basketball gets across half court, let's say. That's just one reference point. But then also what I try to do as soon as a play is completed, conclude my comments as quickly as possible to allow them as much opportunity, because an analyst role is different on radio than it is on TV. TV, it's not an issue if oftentimes they're talking as the play starting or before it gets started, because you can see what's going on. But in radio, you're trying to establish location and all of the things that we talked about before that helps set up the image in the listener's mind.
When you call, let's talk specifically about football here. When you call a high school game, when you call a college game, when you call an NFL game, is there any difference?
There is considerable difference. A lot of times it can start with location. NFL games and some of the newer NFL stadiums have really done radio disservice. They, with some of the locations, they put radio booths in corners of end zones with certain obstructions at times. So that's one of the first things that happens. Also, some of the space that you have to work with, or if you're around fans, which can happen sometimes in high school games, it can even happen sometimes in college games. One of the other big differences is the information that's provided to you to prepare for these games. For high school games, and I don't do many, but for high school games, sometimes it's difficult to even get a roster, just so that you know names and numbers of players. Colleges provide you with a great deal of information. The NFL provides you with much more information. So those are probably the most significant differences.
When you call a game for the Ohio State Buckeyes, because you do it on a consistent basis, do you have a good relationship with the school?
Very, and it's important to do that. And mostly that involves the people in the sports information departments, because they're the ones that arrange a lot of your interviews, your interview time with coaches and players. They're the ones that provide you with the game notes and the statistics. So it's very important to have that. You have to have a great working relationship with those things.
Seems like all broadcasters approach this differently, but in your opinion, how much opinion comes out in an Ohio State game? Your opinion.
It's limited, because I think what we're there for, especially on radio, is to explain what's going on. Occasionally, there'll be something that will allow you to do that. For example, we had a situation last weekend with a targeting penalty against one of the Ohio State players who ended up being removed from the game because of that. And it allowed for a little opportunity to discuss some thoughts on where college football might deal with a targeting penalty moving forward. Analysts have a little more leeway, a little more opportunity, because, again, they have the experience of having competed at that level out there. So as far as a game announcer, it's something you have to be very, very careful about.
When it comes to that, giving your opinion, has there ever been a reflection to the university or maybe to a sponsor, a commercial sponsor, that they did not like what you had to say? Or is that cognizant in your head when you're giving an opinion?
It's cognizant in my head that there's nothing that I can recall recently. Many years ago when I was in college, there was a situation during a high school game where there was some concern about how we dealt with an injury, and it was a lengthy injury, but upon going back and reviewing it, it wasn't as bad as what the others thought. You know, it was a serious injury, and I think the school at first was concerned at how it was being addressed, but it all washed out pretty good. But no, but again, you are cognizant of trying to make sure you're portraying the university, the team, the athletes, the coaches, and your broadcast employers doing that in a good light.
Ohio State during your tenure has had some interesting time periods with Coach Tressel and Urban Meyer, and now where we are. Is it ever proper for the announcer to talk about what's going on there, change in the guard, why the change in the guard happened, or is that just left up to writers and opinion people?
Oh, no, you know, you have to address it, but you have to address it in a responsible manner. I mean, it certainly is one of those things that you have to walk a little bit of a tightrope, but you can't ignore what's known, and that's the important part. When you're going to address it and you're going to talk about it, you have to talk about what's known or refer to it in a way that, of what's alleged to have occurred and things like that. You know, that is a difficult thing, and especially when it leads to things that lead to, you know, coaches either being dismissed from their jobs or resigning or, you know, and fortunately, it's not been that often that we've seen controversy within the Ohio State programs with that. But yeah, there is times where you have to address it, but, you know, you have to be mindful of how you approach that.
There was a period there, and you were certainly calling the games when this was going on, where you had the football coach, Jim Tressel, the president of the university, Gordon Gee, and John Waters, who was over the band, director of the band, all either resigning or leaving, depending on what story you paid attention to, and it all happened in a very short period of time. What was that period like, calling the games?
Well, it was interesting because, first off, I'll remove the John Waters situation because that was more of a news story. I did not have to be involved in commenting on that at all. The situation with Coach Tressel was one that really kind of took a couple of different turns because some of that occurred right prior, if you'll remember, Scott, right prior to Ohio State playing into a bowl game, and players were going to end up having to be suspended into the following season. And then it took another turn after the bowl game where more information came out about the things that had occurred under Coach Tressel's watch. And then you were having to talk about all of that. And the thing that I remember, and it kind of led to a little bit of what happened with President Gee, some of the announcement of the forthcoming penalties into the future occurred while Ohio State's basketball team was the number one seed overall in the NCAA tournament. Remember that Gordon Gee somewhat apologized for how it took away from what was a great time for the basketball program. And then eventually we got into the following summer where it was Memorial Day weekend where Coach Tressel was removed or stepped down or however you want to hear it because it's never really been clearly identified what happened, but where that change had to occur and Luke Fickell was made head coach. So it took a lot of different twists and turns, but having worked as a news reporter in the past, it kind of gave a little bit of a point of reference on how to deal with some things like that.
When that whole situation was going on, the Coach Tressel situation, what was your feeling on that? You had to go there, you had to do the games, you had to go back and do the games after he was no longer there. What was the feeling?
Well, when it was happening, there were games going on. So it didn't involve a game broadcast because, again, his departure occurred over Memorial Day. So it was outside of the season. But in my Monday through Friday on-air responsibilities that had to be dealt with the sportscast that we do. And again, you limit yourself to what's known, what's factual, and go from there. By the time that following season started in 2011, everything was already in play with Luke Fickell as the head coach. Now you had to make reference to the players that were suspended, but and occasionally, you know, make reference to the difficult situation that it put Ohio State in because not only did it involve Coach Tressel, but then you had the presumptive starting quarterback for that season who decided to leave prior to his senior year, and it put the football team in a bind because they ended up having to play a couple of quarterbacks that they really weren't planning on and weren't prepared for it. So, but most of the focus once you're involved in doing the game is on the game itself and with who's playing, who's coaching, and not so much who's not there anymore.
there a difference between calling a game for a team that is winning all their games and a team that is not doing so well?
There are some differences, but the differences are smaller than the similarities. And I spent a number of years doing games for the University of Cincinnati before coming to Columbus, when their football program really struggled. It's still the same basics. It's still time and score, down and distance, describing the players. You know, maybe it's different from a television standpoint, but for radio, no. There's as far as what you're presenting on the air, no. Now, maybe there's differences with the number of exciting plays or the potential of what could happen with a team at the end of the year with their success, but within the game part of it, no, there's not really a difference. You still have to focus on the same things.
Why is football the dominant game in this country at this point?
I wish I had an answer to that. I think because, I don't know. There could be a few reasons for that. Number one, it's a once-a-week thing. So there's a six-day buildup, whether it's college or whether it's pro or even high school for that. I think also most of the season occurs as the weather has changed and people are more interior. Also, it does create a great bond with people who either attended the school, whether it's college or high school, people whose children have attended there. But also maybe, you know, your relationship with either your parents, as they were fans of those teams or things like that nature. And, you know, baseball has its own appeal, but there's 162 games plus playoffs. So you can kind of, you know, move in and out with your heightened interest. Football, it's once a week, and the buildup probably is what makes it such a big thing.
Over the last few years, injuries, concussions that stem from football games have really come to light. Do you think long-term, some changes have been made, but do you think long-term we're going to see a lot more changes when it comes to this?
Not sure. I think the one thing that we may see change is what happens with kickoffs. You know, so many teams now are catching kickoffs because you get the ball at the 25-yard line. The kick return seems to be such a rarity, especially in college football. That's one of the things that we may see in the future. The kickoff may be eliminated. There have been so many other changes, eliminating the wedge, things like that. And the field position becomes so crucial. But there's nobody who, and, you know, we mentioned the targeting penalties earlier, and it's a good thing that it's been done from the point of safety. Administering it has made it a difficult job for the officials. It's made a difficult job even more difficult. And, you know, I think we're going to see changes in that as far as possibly are players going to be ejected. How do they change it when an offensive player is lowering himself and it causes the defensive player to make helmet-on-helmet contact? Certainly nobody will find any fault with what the sport has done and will continue to do to try and implement safety.
A debate for several years has certainly been the paying of college players. What's your whole feeling, on that whole issue?
Well, I think we knew at some point in time something was going to come. The name and image likeness thing has been building for a while. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes moving forward, because it's one more thing that has to be watched over, one more thing that has to be administered and make sure that it's being done in the way that it's intended to be done. It's a tricky situation because certainly the universities benefit from what these student-athletes are doing. And nobody would find any fault with the fact that some of these student-athletes need to make some sort of benefit from it. And if it eliminates the under-the-table things that had happened in some instances that have caused for schools to be put on probation, then that's great. So I think the fact that you've got athletic directors and very smart people and conference commissioners that knew this was coming about it to be prepared for it, hopefully that makes it work very well. But it's all brand new. And, you know, if there's any pitfalls, if there's any issues with it, then, you know, those are things that everybody's probably just going to learn along the way.
Because of the games they win and the championships they've won and the way the season plays out, Ohio State has become a marketing genius. I mean, they market all kinds of things. If the team did not win a game all season, would people still come to the games?
Yes, but probably not nearly as many of them. We saw earlier this year where there was a football game, and I can't recall which one it was. It might have been the Oregon game, to be honest with you, the first home game, where they had the lowest attendance at Ohio Stadium since 1971. So winning certainly helps offset a lot. I think, you know, certainly the rise in ticket prices has made it a challenge. Throwing into that the licensing fees that people are going to have to pay to be able to maintain season tickets. But winning overcomes all. Winning gets people coming to the games. Winning gets your teams in selective, you know, prime selective TV positions. Winning makes a lot of things go well. If a team wasn't winning and went through continued losing difficulties, that's where you see coaching changes occur. That's where you see recruiting challenges. So winning does overcome all.
What has happened this season? Certainly started off rocky, now seems to be doing okay. What's going on there, in your opinion?
Well, it was a team that had a lot of questions as far as youth and inexperience. If you go back to 2020, and it's been talked about a lot, a compressed schedule, it didn't really allow for non-conference games where, in Ohio State's case and many others, when you had games that got lopsided and you could put backup players in, second, third, fourth team players, walk-ons, there were development opportunities that were taken away because there weren't as many games and there weren't those type of games in 2020. Add in the players that Ohio State lost due to expired eligibility. And one particular instance would be they lost their top four producing linebackers from the previous year. So linebacker was going to be a big question. They lost their most experienced defensive back in Sean Wade. You lost a record-setting quarterback in Justin Fields. So what 2021 brought about were a lot of questions. And every year there's teams that have questions. And this was a football team that needed to get on the field to start playing, to have the experience of going up against opponents and figuring out where they needed to go from there. Defensively, there were issues from last year that carried into this year, and that was some of the yards and some of the points were given up, and it prompted Ryan Day to make a change with his defensive coaching staff on how some of the duties were handled. What we're seeing now is this team has gotten more experience. They've gotten more repetitions on the field. They've grown into what's going on. Also, they kind of hit their stride, too, playing against some lesser-talented opponents. Face it, they started the season playing against a Minnesota team who right now is the front runner to win the Big Ten West and an Oregon team who's ranked number four in the college football playoff poll. Generally, you see Ohio State starting the season against teams that they played late in September and early October, and it allows them to ease into things. That didn't happen this year. So that's why you've seen some of the transition that's occurred, but also it's been confidence and repetitions.
How important is the coach?
Incredibly important because they're the face of the program. You can have athletes that have great seasons, but those athletes move on. The head coach is the face of the program. The head coach not only has to coach, he has to administer practice. He has to oversee his staff. He has to recruit. He has to deal with the media. He has to make public appearances. It's incredibly important, especially in college. There's a little bit of a difference to the professional level. But in college, the head coach is the face of the program. When things go well, everybody knows who the head coach of the Buckeyes is. When things don't go well, they know who it is, but usually not for a good reason.
You know, it's very interesting because we've seen this happen before, but it's currently happening with Urban Meyer. He came when Ohio State was having their trouble with Jim Tressel. We did have Luke Fickell there for a year, but Urban Meyer came, and the team was doing great, and everybody was happy, and now he's in the NFL, and this great winning college coach is not doing so well in the NFL. Is there any explanation as to why that has happened to so many college coaches?
Well, it's a different animal. And a lot of times you see the coaches make those changes because they don't have to recruit at the professional level like they do in college. That's where the general managers and front office staff are. But you're dealing with grown men. You're dealing with men that have been in the professional level in a lot of cases for a number of years. You're dealing with athletes that are, in most cases, being paid more than the head coach. And that could bring about a certain attitude that has to be dealt with. And if the personalities don't quite mesh, that's where there can be a disconnect. But, for Urban Meyer, it has been a challenge. And this is a guy that, you know, remember, he had removed himself from coaching for a handful of years to retire, and then all of a sudden gets into the professional ranks. And what's happened now is he goes to a football program, the football team in Jacksonville, that had been struggling. You know, the worst team in pro football. He got the number one draft pick in Trevor Lawrence. But there's a growth that has to occur there. So it certainly has been a challenge, but he's not been the only one that's run into that. The off-the-field incident he had a few weeks ago has added to the challenge that he's faced. But it's rare when you see the coaches who've been successful at the college level to go do that at professional level, or in many cases, vice versa.
The story that Urban Meyer got wrapped up in earlier this season at his restaurant with the girl, is that a story that needs to be brought up in a booth or during a game at a school that he used to coach for?
No, not at all. There's no reason. It doesn't affect Ohio State. So as far as what we're dealing with this current team and this current coaching staff, no, there's no reason for us to discuss it on here.
Were you surprised that that got as much traction as it did?
I really am going to stay away from that whole story. It's a little too close to the things that we have that's going on here, and I'm just going to stay away.
Okay. No problem at all. Have there been other instances of things that you had to stay away from?
Probably. I can't think of them off the top of my head right now. But again, some of that goes back to, and this goes back into the sportscasting role that I serve, not as a game announcer, but, you know, if you're going to report on things, it has to be what's known and what's factual. You know, you can work around some of the things with saying they are alleged to have occurred, but you have to be very, very careful about that. Nothing that jumps to the top of my head right now, you know, other than things that we've already discussed, especially with the incident that involved Coach Tressel and the other players with the Tattoo Gate scandal. But nah, I mean, and again, back to your other question, those are things that when a game's going on with a present team, there's really no reason to discuss it.
We see a lot of this in broadcasting when it comes to politics, that there's always this thought that station management or station ownership is coming to the broadcaster and saying, don't talk about this, talk about this. Have you ever had instances of that?
No. And I say that, hopefully it means that myself and the people that I'm on the air with, that we've been able to make the decisions we need to make about what gets covered. If it's been a discussion, it's been something that really hasn't needed to be said. But now, I've been very fortunate that we've not had to deal with things like that. We've not had to have discussions like that. But I think a lot of that just comes down to common sense, too. You know, if you're going to a football game or a basketball game, you know that what you're talking about needs to be focused on what's going on the field there. If there's something that needs to be made reference to, you know, for example, if somebody's not there because of an off-the-field issue, you can address it exactly like that. And, you know, in many cases, people are already aware of what it is. So you don't need, in a game setting, you don't need to go over it much in most cases because it's already known.
When it comes to apps and internet and technology, how has social media, how has that changed the game?
Well, the biggest thing that is for our benefit, that the internet and the information that's available has helped you in your preparation. There are more places that you can go to find out biographical information about the players or coaches that you can work into getting yourself set to do a game broadcast. It does bring about, you know, players and their involvement with social media, and, you know, there's some instances that are good, some that aren't, with what they've done. You know, there's a number of these student athletes that make people aware of, and Harry Miller, who's one of Ohio State's offensive linemen, comes to mind. Some of the charitable things that he's done, and how his name and image likeness agreements is something he's done that he's aimed toward a charitable cause. So, from our standpoint, for what we do, it has provided a whole lot more opportunity to gather information and to be prepared. You know, it also, and it's more important with football. You get an opportunity, you know, for example, this weekend with Ohio State playing Nebraska. I've been able to access and watch Nebraska's previous game a handful of times with Purdue just to be prepared and be ready for that.
Is there a game that sticks out in your mind as a game, maybe not necessarily great for Ohio State or great for the team they played, but that you were just into that game, that was the best call you've ever had?
Well, I don't know that I'm the person to say that, to try and pin one down, it was the best call that I ever had, but I know that the ones that are most exciting would be when Ohio State beat Miami for the national championship at the end of the 2002 season. It was a season in which they had so many close cliffhanger-type games that they were able to win and be undefeated. Going into a championship game that they were double-digit underdogs in against the defending national champions, who I believe had like a 30-some game winning streak or 20-some game winning streak, and to see them win a game with what was at stake, knowing the underdogs they were, just knowing how the whole season had gone, that was one that really kind of stands out, almost to the point when it was over, you just really couldn't believe that run had been completed.
Is the Ohio State-Michigan game different for the broadcaster?
No, you can sense the heightened excitement. I think because of the fact that during the game I sit next to a former player, Jim Lachey, who played in that game. I also spent 7 years working in the Detroit market during a time when Bo Schembechler was still the head coach at Michigan, and would oftentimes hear his reference to Woody Hayes and the importance of that rivalry, both having been an assistant at Ohio State and having been the head coach at Michigan. It the fact that it's still the last game of the regular season, the fact that you hear so many former players talk about it's the most physical game they've ever played in, And when you're there, you can kind of sense the excitement, and I'm sure that fans in the stands can feel that way. You can sense the difference. It's generally a game that has a lot at stake for one or both teams, and on a rare occasion where maybe there isn't a championship at stake, it's still something that has, you know, to say pride, maybe doesn't do it justice, but it has a lot at stake as far as how they feel about their football careers.
When you are covering a team each and every week, do you become a fan of that team, and does that translate, maybe sometimes unknowingly, into your work?
Yes, you become a fan of that team, and you want to see them do well. But you also have to maintain a certain amount of objectivity when you're talking about what's going on. If they're not playing well, you have to do it, but do it in a, you know, a respectful manner that's not, you know, piling on or not, you know, casting undue criticism. You also have to be mindful of giving credit to the opposing team if they're having a good season or a good game and they're making great plays. So it kind of goes both ways. But yes, you do become a fan because you're around the coach to a limited degree. You're around some of the players, but you become aware of them. And you can't help but become a fan of those people that you see and want them to do well.
Much like the Ohio State-Michigan game, for the fans, the students, even alumni, this is a very emotional game for them. When you call that game, if you give Michigan credit, are you going to hear about it from the fans and the emails and the tweets and all the ways we have to connect with people?
You know what? First off, if Michigan does something well that deserves credit, then there's no issue with giving it to them. And, I really try not to pay attention to the things that are done on social media that are aimed at me, yes, because I think we've all learned the squeaky wheel sometimes gets the grease, and for all of those people that maybe find fault with you, there's that many more that appreciate what you're doing. But, it's just a matter of being an objective observer. If Michigan makes a great play, you have to acknowledge it as such. Now, maybe you acknowledge it in a different way than you would if Ohio State makes a great play, and the excitement that comes through in your voice may be different or all of those, but no, your job is still to present what's going on. And, you know, people who listen to our broadcast probably, they don't have any issue understanding who we want to see do well. But, you know, when somebody else plays well, you've got to address that also.
Radio's an interesting bird because it is live, you're on the air, and you're speaking, and if you say something wrong that has happened, the audience really doesn't know it right then because they're listening to you. Is there something you, in your mind, the worst error, and we all have them in radio, that you think, boy, that was a day?
Well, like you said, we all have them, and there's times when you make it the name or misidentify a player because of similarities in numbers and things like that. And all you can do is, once you're away, if it happens pretty immediately, all you can do is just try and address it and correct it. Yeah, there have been things that have happened. There were, you know, many years ago doing games for the University of Cincinnati, there was a field goal try that I thought was going to be blocked, and it wasn't. And it ended up being a game winner for an opposing team. But, you know, those who don't make mistakes, you have to wonder if they're really telling you the truth. We all do. You just try and minimize it. There's nobody that feels worse than your own self when you get something wrong, but you just try and be as prepared as you can so that those things happen as little as possible.
Even when you don't feel well, is it fun to go to work?
It is, and you even appreciate that when you haven't been able to do it. Back in 2010, I missed two football games because I was in the hospital for unexpected surgery. So you really learn to appreciate it, even when you don't feel well. And it's even less than that, I would say, you know, even at times when you have something about your job, and my job involves more than just doing the football and the basketball games, but when there's times that you're just not crazy about doing it, you don't look forward to doing it, and there's a variety of things that can come into play there, you still have to look at the overall picture. You know, you still have a job that you've desired. You still have a job that a lot of other people would like. And the pluses by far outweigh the minuses, and I'm sure it's that case for a lot of people. You just have to remind yourself of that.
How long would you like to keep on keeping on?
I don't know if I'm comfortable talking about that. It's just, as long as I feel good, as long as my employers are happy about it, and as long as I feel like I'm doing a decent job and they feel that I am, then, you know, there's still time left.
Do you know internally when you're not at your best? Johnny Carson always said he wanted somebody to tell him if he didn't realize that he was not as good as he once was.
Well, I'm very fortunate that I work with people who I have a lot of trust and confidence in. We have an executive producer who I work very well with, and there'll be times where he'll point things out to me that You know, if something is not been as good as it needs to be, and it's done in a constructive manner. But yes, I think all of us know when we need to be better. But I think also a lot of us are our hardest critics. And sometimes when you think you haven't done as well, you go back and listen or you reevaluate. Maybe it wasn't as bad as you think. Sometimes when you think you did, maybe it wasn't as good as you think. But, you know, maybe the best answer to that is you can always do better, and you always approach it trying to do better than what you did the previous time.
When you are the voice of a team, people know you. What do people say to you when they see you in the grocery store, they see you in the parking lot? What's the reaction?
Well, fortunately, it's not based on sight in most cases. It's usually somebody may know who I am based on if they hear me speaking and recognize my voice. And in most cases, if they address you, it's 99% of the time, it's flattering and it's complimentary. You just thank them. You show appreciation. But you also try to not make it all about yourself. You know, if it ends up being a little bit of a lengthy conversation, it's always nice to ask that person, you know, what do they do? Do they go to the games? You know, and make it about them as well.
Sports broadcasting in general, can be a very demanding job. Do you have any regrets in your career?
Probably, but I can't think of them right off the top of my head. And it would have been from maybe back in my 20s, you know, being young and dumb. But fortunately, those are fewer than the things that have been great decisions. The decision to move to Columbus in 1998 was a fantastic one. I'm sure there are, but, you know, they're kind of put in the back, other than, you know, trying to remember things that didn't go well and learn from them.
Does it have any impact on family life?
Not really. It could, and it can, and maybe it has at times, but, you know, you have to learn to work around it, and I'm very fortunate that, you know, I have important people in my life that understand what it is that I do. They understand, the biggest thing sometimes is the travel and the schedule, especially in the month of November when football and basketball are going on at the same time. But you just have to kind of understand that going in, much like, you know, if the other people in your life, you need to understand what the demands of their job are. But the other thing, too, is to leave it alone. Certainly, when I get home, sometimes the last thing in the world I want to do is watch a sporting event. You have to learn to be able to leave it alone and decompress in other ways.
Is there anybody you looked to and said, that's somebody who does this game well, and I want to do it as well as they do it, broadcasting-wise?
Oh, there have been a number of those people. I think that starts with when you're a kid, you know, and the people that you grew up listening to and those that influenced you. I was fortunate in the 1960s to listen to Jim McIntyre, who did the Reds games with Joe Nuxall, you know, then was followed by Al Michaels and Marty Brenneman. There was a gentleman who did the Cincinnati Royals by the name of Don Valentino, who was a big influence listening to basketball. Phil Sant, who was the original voice of the Cincinnati Bengals, was one that created an influence on broadcasting football games. But now there are people that I truly do enjoy how they do things, with, you know, the World Series having just completed. Dan Shulman, who does the World Series on radio for ESPN, is one that I really enjoy listening to how he does baseball. Brad Nessler, who does the SEC games on CBS, and I don't get a chance to hear those that often because in most cases it's when Ohio State's playing, but a guy that I really, really am very impressed and enjoy listening to him, how he presents doing football. You know, there's analysts, again, with the World Series, John Smoltz on television. Fantastic listening to the things that he points out about baseball, and a guy that was a pitcher, but he can tell you so much about the other parts of the game outside of pitching. So, yeah, there's quite a few folks like that.
Has there been a player in your tenure for Ohio State that just had something different than all other players had?
Troy Smith, the last Heisman Trophy winner that Ohio State had. When Troy took over as quarterback, and he started having success, I believe it was the 2004 season, not only could you see his incredible talents, but you could see the effect that he had on his other teammates on offense around him. There was just something special about not only the way he played himself, but the way he fit with his teammates on the field. And, you know, the year he won the Heisman Trophy was truly a magical and a special season. Part of what made that so exciting was not just because of his skills, but how he seemed to really be such a great leader on the field and how he seemed to really connect and bring the most out of his teammates that were on the field with him.
We have about 3 minutes left here with Paul Keels, and this has been a lot of fun. Paul, Michigan's coming up. How's the rest of the season going to play out?
Well, this weekend it's Nebraska, and that's a scary game because Nebraska's only won 3 games, but they've had a number of games that they've lost in one-score margins. It's a team that's more talented physically than they've been in a handful of years, so it's a scary game. It's a game on the road. You know, ranked ahead of Ohio State in the playoff poll. Then comes Michigan. One of the things that Ryan Day has been so good about is making sure that this team is focused on what comes on that week, not what's in the future. And that's kind of the approach that this team has to have. If they get caught looking ahead to Michigan, then that's where you can find things happen. You know, if you remember in recent years, they had a loss at Iowa, and then another season a loss at Purdue that kept them from being able to get into the college football playoffs. And hopefully they've learned their lessons from that. The Michigan game will get here soon enough, and that will be a special and a big-time thing. But, you know, they've done a great job under Ryan Day on focusing on what the immediate goal is.
Is there the possibility for them to finish out the regular season with all wins?
It certainly is possible, but they're going to have to continue to play football at a high level. And again, go back to the earlier comment. Ohio State gets everybody's best shot. We've seen in the past when they've lost games that they weren't expected to lose, despite all of the overall success that they've had. But there's no question, if they play at their best, there's no question that they could finish the rest of the regular season undefeated, get to a Big Ten championship game, potentially play well enough to win that. And then hopefully at that point it would get them in the college football playoff. But there certainly is the good potential that they could finish out the rest of the regular season of the Big Ten championship undefeated.
You know, Paul, for better than 20 years now, you have been the soundtrack to people's Ohio State games over the radio. Years from now, when people look back on that time and they're listening to these games and they've all been taped, what do you hope they say about you?
Nothing about me, just that they've been able to follow the game, pay attention to what went on in the game. It's not about the announcer, and that's just kind of how I look at it. If people are appreciative of how myself and other people have presented it, then that's great. But hopefully they feel like they've been able to follow along with a football game, that they feel the excitement that occurred during the game, and it made them excited. It's about the event. It's not about the announcers.
Paul, with 90 seconds left, we want to go back and pick this up. How did you get the job at Ohio State?
Fortunately, the executive producer at the time was somebody that I worked with back in the late 1970s, and when there was about to be an opening, he contacted me. So it was kind of a past association that came back and connected me.
Paul Keels, the voice of Ohio State on radio. I know you know this voice. Paul, this has been a real pleasure, and I hope it's not your only stop here at the program.
Appreciate it, Scott. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes on radio. Well, there's a little insight into the season that remains and the career of Paul Keels. How about that? Let's see. We've got about 30 seconds left. We do have the information from the Board of Elections that Adam recorded this morning. We are going to get that on. It's about a minute and a half long, and it probably will end up on the news report for tomorrow. So don't stray away from that. Glenn Coble's coming up next, 10:15 to 12 noon, and then Swap Shop, 12:15 to 1 p.m. today. Adam will be on this afternoon, 2:10 until 3 p.m. For now, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Peace for the best guests and talk. From Joey Diori at WGN's Bozo the Clown.
Before we wrap up, I'll ask, and you can or can't, can you do something in the Bozo voice for those people?
You know, the funny thing is, and as I mentioned before,